the Financial Sense Lifetime Planning Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, it's no secret that we live in a very litigious society. You can get sued for just about anything, from free speech to accidents. There's all kinds of liabilities. So how does one protect oneself, especially if you have significant assets? That's the subject of today's program. Rejoining me on the program is Kevin Day from Tresp and Day & Associates. And Kevin, let's talk about the society we live in today. We're hearing all the time somebody's getting sued for a car accident, liability for speech. There's all kinds of things one can get sued for. And it becomes more significant if one has accumulated, let's say, significant assets. For example, a lot of my doctor clients have E&O insurance, but they also have particular pension plans that are exempt from a lawsuit. So let's talk about various ways you can protect assets.
Of course, the normal answer, if you go into a corporate lawyer, a estate planning lawyer, or a real estate lawyer, and somebody says, I want lawsuit protection, their answer is, how many assets do you have? And let's form a bunch of companies, LLCs, and put eggs in different baskets. And that is absolutely wise advice, but it's only doing a partial job. One, companies only protect you from what's in that box. So if the crane that's in an LLC or your rental property that's in an LLC, the boiler blows up, you'll lose that property, the equity in that property, plus insurance that might go toward the case. But as long as you don't commingle and other piercing the corporate veil issues don't come to you, you lose that property, but it doesn't come and take your other businesses and your other rentals and your home and your savings. But what happens if you get sued personally? It comes down that ownership chain to those companies. And that will lead us into irrevocable trusts as we move forward in the podcast.
Let's take a situation, because I have a situation where I have a group of doctors. There's three doctors. They're neurologists, and they own their own building. They own their own MRI machines or CAT scan machines. I forget which one. But they also own a office building, which they house their practice, and they have tenants. That's significant. Now, they set up an LLC. So explain to our listeners how this protects them, and what does it protect them, and what doesn't protect them?
Again, there's internal liability and external liability. And when I say internal liability, that means something coming from inside that dental practice. So an employee sues, or one of the patients sues because, unbeknownst to the dentist, there's some other kind of root, you know, whatever occurs that leads to that issue. And if somebody sues, your first line of defense is going to be insurance. But insurance has its monetary limits that it becomes unreasonable to pay to get $15 million worth of coverage. And even if you do, there's always exceptions. The quote unquote fine point that's protecting the insurance company for certain large type of events. And so let's say you do have insurance that covers, let's say, $500,000 of the claim, but it's a $1 million claim. They will, theoretically, the plaintiff is going to try to get an attachment order, which is a taking order, to come in and unbolt the x-ray machines and the drills, the very expensive stuff. Now, the lucky thing about an LLC, an attachment order will not be issued against an LLC as long as it has innocent parties. That's a mistake I've seen with a lot of, let's say, dabblers that say, oh, you need lawsuit protection. We're going to give you a limited partnership or an LLC, and you'll get the charging order. And then they put husband as X percent as general. They're going to be the lightning rod, and the wife has the limited partnership interest. Well, husband and wives, especially in California, but even the non-community states, have laws that kind of work the same. Husband and wives are one party, unless you have a prenup, postnup, and you file taxes separately and really diligently keep the line between you, which most people don't have that situation. Or they say, oh, the lawyer said, I'm going to be the general lightning rod, and I'm going to put the 95% to be protected in my living trust, and the living trust is revocable. So it's not lawsuit protected at all. But with two different dentists, you do have a separate independent party, third party that should be protected. So the attachment order or taking order that would take either the stock, so you have a new partner, or take equipment and the bank account, only a charge will issue. And a charge is like a lien. It says when, let's say, Jim, you're my partner and we're dentists, and I get into a horrible car accident and there are bad damages. And so they want to take my assets, they would send a charge to our LLC that instructs when distributions are made. The one that's going to Kevin Day will go to the court, to the marshals. Unlike a corporation, a C or S, where you would have a new partner, my stock would be given to, that's an attachment order. Attachment orders issue for corporations, charging order issue for limited partnerships and LLCs.
So an LLC is one way of protecting. Kevin, are there other ways that you can protect? You know, I've often heard of offshore trusts. You hear of very famous politicians like former President Bill Clinton. The Clintons have an offshore trust, and wealthy people have offshore trust. Is this for asset protection, or is it for privacy? How does an offshore trust come into play? What are the pluses and the minuses?
It's a big, for the audience, these offshore trusts became legal in the U.S. by the big powers were putting together what ended up being called the Hague Convention on Trusts in 1985. And the U.S. became a signatory to that. And that was the first time where you could set up an irrevocable trust and name yourself as the beneficiary, have a lawsuit proof trust that you establish and name yourself. It was unheard of before the late 80s. And that really, essentially, it said you can set up trusts, and U.S. persons can set up trusts in other countries, and that law will prevail in the U.S. and be the law of the land in the U.S. Before that, the only way to set up a lawsuit-proof trust was for the original owner to give it away, typically a parent or grandparent setting up things for their children or grandchildren, and the original owner could not be the trustee or the beneficiary. So that was the only way to make a lawsuit-proof trust. When entrepreneurs heard about the Hague Convention, they went nuts. Luckily, I already had several books out on the subject, and I and another author attorney out of Florida were the only ones there. And we became the continuing ed speakers for CPAs and lawyers. And it's completely legal. There's IRS special reporting for it. It's just a declaration form, but it's worthwhile because that's part of your defense file, because judges don't come from trust lawyers. They come from prosecutors. So to say, hey, here's the law. These are recognized in all 50 states. Actually, treaties, conventions, and presidential decrees are superior to federal law. So it's highly recognized. And the IRS is at the federal level. They were handcuffed. And they said, as long as you fill out this form and say, if there's any taxes due from the assets owned by the offshore trust, you promise to pay them if they're due. Your accountants can still do other wizardry. But if you do that, then we're going to recognize this as the most ironclad, irrevocable trust under U.S. law. It removes U.S. court jurisdiction. If somebody wants to attack it, they have to go abroad.
Let's just take an example of, I have another doctor who has substantial assets, and they're probably, you know, well over 10, probably closer to 20 million. He owns his own office building. He is a surgeon. He also has substantial pension and personal assets. Would it behoove him, because doctors tend to be more liable when you're performing operations if something goes wrong, they're always getting sued. Would it be advantageous for somebody like him to put his assets outside his LLC into an offshore trust?
Absolutely. So there's two ways to do it. One is to put the assets into the trust or do a transaction, which we do here in our office, that creates proper and legal consideration so we can equity strip those assets that remain in your name or your LLC's name. And our analysis as lawsuit protection experts is to say, what's zero liability? That's going to be cash and portfolio. And that's the low-hanging fruit. Litigation attorneys, collection attorneys, they don't want businesses. They don't want equipment. They don't want real property because they're going to be an owner for a little while. Something might, do they buy insurance just for a few months while they're selling it? And so they only go to those as last resort. So obviously, what we're typically doing is not moving assets offshore. For some clients, it's appropriate, but we're importing foreign law, but leaving the assets here. And typically in an underlying company that the client doesn't own, but the lawsuit proof trust does, and we can make the client the manager. So they still have the checkbook, they can make all the decisions, but they're not technically the owner. And if they're not the owner, it can't be taken. Then the high liability assets, things that can damage or hurt people, those things are high liability. And then there's the stuff in between that's very valuable, might even make the main income for the family or practice, but is also high liability. And that's where our finesse comes in. The high value things that are also high value, that's we keep in the client's name or in the entity name, but equity strip it so that high value thing can't be taken.
Explain for our listeners equity strip. Let's take this client. He owns a building. He has a pension plan with several million dollars in it. And he also has a personal cash portfolio that he's built up in his C-Corp. Which has been invested in dividend stocks, which right now 50% he doesn't pay any tax on. But he has substantial, let's say, portfolio assets. So explain stripping for our listeners how that would work.
Yes. And I do want to mention any ERISA plan is going to be protected, a la O.J. Simpson. He gets $25,000 a month. And even after he receives it, that can't be taken. But cash value in insurance policies can be taken, savings within the company. But you want to balance it, obviously, against the tax benefits. So something like that stock, it can be pledged, but leave it where it is. And pledged for valuable consideration. Consideration means something of substance or reality for a listener's point of view. Everybody that's one of your clients and a listener has gotten a mortgage at some point. And so you go to Bank of America, Union Bank, or whoever you work with and say, I would like some money and I'll pay you over time. And they say, sure, but only if we're a secured creditor. We want to put a lien against your house. And that's why the joke, hey, do you own your house? Well, I'm on the paper, but I have, you know, the bank owns my house. So that creates to a litigator that's looking to sue you that if there's a lot of equity, that means there's a big piggy bank at the end of the rainbow. There's a significant thing that we can blackmail you into settling for a million or two more than you wanted to. It jeopardizes your marriage. Your productivity at work, real time is stolen from your work, but the emotional time really, people actually see decrease in income when they're going through a lawsuit because it's all consuming. And as a litigator, why am I going to settle early when you have a bunch of things that you can lose? You're getting more and more sleepless nights. I'm going to wait to the 11th hour, the so-called settlement on the courtroom steps, to get an extra million or two in settlement. But if I look at you and say, wow, I see all these properties and buildings, but wow, Union Bank is on first and Golden Mountain Funding is on second. There's no equity there. A contingency fee attorney is not going to take it. The hourly will, but they need to control their expectations has gone down. They want to control their client's expectations because they don't want to be the bad guy that ran this whole case and just got a piece of paper. That will spread around town. So they'll say, well, this is a great case. I've made $6 million with $8 million with similar circumstances. It's a great case. But even though we see all these dental practices around town with his name on it or her name on it, they're up to their eyeball and hot to do this expansion. Let's fire across the bow. Let's see what their insurance coverage is. But if they can offer anything above that, we're going to be happy and just get out because you don't want to pay me $200,000 and get nothing.
Let's take this example where a client has $5 million in assets that are portfolio and cash. He transfers this to an offshore trust. His obligations, obviously those portfolio assets are producing interest or dividends. His requirement under tax law is to report that income, interest or dividends, whatever its makeup, capital gains, to report it on the tax return. So as long as he does that, he's being legal, he's keeping within the laws. Would that be the requirement or are there additional requirements?
Well, we can structure the trust and we usually recommend it with what's called a 3520 form, 3520A, which is just a one-page form with three pages of instruction. The entity that the K-1 is issued from doesn't file taxes. It's put on your Schedule E. Most of the time, there are clients that want to use the offshore trustees and international banking and certain investments offshore, but probably 93% of our clients use what we call a dormant trust. Things are not under the client, the trustee's control, even though these are big trustees with hundreds of millions of dollars under direct management. Most Americans, even if they're well-traveled, say, you know, I want the advantages of offshore, but I am an entrepreneur. I want my checkbook. So we usually put it in a Delaware or Nevada or Wyoming privacy company, so their name isn't in the public record. But when a lawsuit occurs, the adverse party says, you know, list everything you own under penalty of perjury through the collection process, and they're going to list everything they own. An irrevocable trust is a completely independent owner from the client, unlike LLCs and corporations where they're the shareholder or member and have to list it. So even to a direct question, do you own Golden Mountain Funding of Nevada under penalty of perjury? You can say no, because an irrevocable trust is an ultimate owner. Nobody owns it, just like a human. Nobody owns a human, but companies have to have shareholders and members and partners.
Given these circumstances, who in your practice do you generally recommend something like an offshore trust or the vehicles we've been speaking with? You know, I mentioned a couple high liability type clients who are doctors, surgeons. Who would you recommend something like this for?
Yes, I used to refuse to answer that because it's all circumstances driven. But probably about my first 8, 10 years, I didn't. But I started to see patterns. And so for the last 20, I do have kind of a formula. There are copycat laws that started in Alaska that copycatted the offshore trust statutorily to make a domestic version. And so if somebody is 2 million and below, I'm not going to mention the international. It's just too big of a nut to crack economically. But, and then if they're 4 million and above, I'm going to say you really need this. If you are in a position with 4 million and above, that usually your estate is accelerating. All your creature comforts got taken care of at about $3.5 million. And now that's why you have disposable income that you're reinvesting in real estate and portfolio and so forth. And if that gets taken away, you got to start all over. The international big club is the way to go because under U.S. law, it removes U.S. court jurisdiction. If somebody wants to sue, they have to go to the Isle of Man or Montserrat or Cook Islands. So 4 million and above, I would seriously recommend it, even if they don't have any employees or tenants anymore. They've sold their businesses and liquidated and they're, you know, having fun now in their retirement. They still have a big chunk of money that you don't want taken away. It's that area between 4 and 2 million that we will educate the client and say, you know, you're going to have to be the one to answer this, but let's analyze What's your trajectory? If we have somebody that rented a one-room apartment and drove a 1990 Nissan 5 or 6 years ago, and since then they have built this business, they've hired employees, they've bought a house, sold that house, upgraded their house, they've just hired 4 more people, their trajectory is high. And if they're pouring it all over back into the business with entrepreneurs, whether they're, you know, a doctor or dentist or anything, they often don't. I'm a professional. I'm not a business owner. Well, yes, you are. Even high net worth W-2s that start getting a little pocket full of real estate are business owners, and they never think of themselves as business owners. Your trajectory is so high. Why spend, let's say, $8,000 on a domestic lawsuit protection trust just to go to $20,000 one a year and a half later? You might want to stretch. Or we have somebody that's at 3 million and they're staying at 3 million. My example, a good example, is a locksmith. He had a good little operation, 3 trucks, made a good family living and was happy at that, didn't want to expand. But he's got 3 20-year-olds driving trucks. That's enough to think seriously and get more educated on the offshore trust. They're making keys to people's homes and businesses. And if he had a bad employee come into the mix, and that's just the roll of dice over time, that he said, I'll lose my business, I'll lose my income, that means I'm losing my house, that means I'm losing my wife, and I can't handle that. And I was trying to tell him that a domestic would be sufficient for him, but he ended up going with international. We'll spend plenty of time educating the people that are $6, $8, $80 million, they need to be educated too, but I'm going to be kind of trying to put it in perspective that they don't want to start all over and they should seriously consider international.
So the real keys here, from what I'm hearing you say, is basically if you're 2 million, maybe the domestic solution. If you're in between 2 and 4, but you're in a rising trajectory in terms of your wealth, your liabilities, the assets accumulation, you're a candidate for international. And if you're over 4 million with substantial assets, you are a candidate. Would that be correct?
That's correct.
So, Kevin, if our clients are listening to this and they find themselves in a similar situation, how could they get in touch with you? Because this sounds like a situation you would not want to put yourself in. I have very successful entrepreneurs as clients. I also have very successful doctors that have medical practices with substantial assets. And this just sounds like a great way to take that extra step of protection.
Yes. And we do free consultation for all of your clients, as we've discussed before. Our phone number, if they have a paper and pencil handy, is 858-755-6672, 858-755-6672, or they can look us up on the web at trespday.com. That's T-R-E-S-P, Peter, P, Day, D-A-Y, trespday.com. And just mention that you're coming from Jim at Financial Sense, and we will spell out after we need to hear your concerns, what keep you up at night, but we need to know enough about you because we might say, hey, did you think about this liability and that liability? And you go, oh my gosh, that is, or we don't care about that. That doesn't keep us up at night. And we can do anything from a picket fence that keeps the neighbor boy from running through your roses up to moats and walls and things that shoot back. So depending on what's needed, we have everything in between. And we can do a roadmap that will grow. If somebody's not ready for everything that academically they need, but they go, I'm growing and I want to progress and I want it in reasonable chunks, we can outline the right progression so they're not wasting money on little side things that are just going to be thrown away later because they don't fit the proper structure for the long term.
All right. Well, listen, Kevin, thanks for coming back on the program. Very enlightening. And seriously, if you find yourself in a situation, you're 2 million or 4 million or even above, it may be something for you to consider to protect your assets in this litigious society we all live in. Kevin, thanks so much and have yourself a happy holiday.
Yes, you too, Jim. Thank you so much for having me on the show again.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.